Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. It's been a busy pre-4th of July week. Sorry about that. But don't worry, I'm not going to leave you hanging high and dry for this 4th of July weekend. From the Summit City Comic Con, we've got the digital panel that took place. It was really good. A lot of great creators are there talking about their webcomics. And it was a really good discussion, and it was a pleasure to moderate this panel. So without further ado, it's the Summit City Comic Con digital panel right here on Word Balloon.
Welcome to what we're calling, I guess, the Web and Digital Comics panel. My name is John Suntress. I host a podcast called Word Balloon, and I'm very happy to be on this august panel with these gentlemen. I'm just going to be the moderator. They're going to tell you a little bit about their comics as they introduce themselves. So let's start with Dave Losso, please.
Yeah, he just said my name. I do a digital comic called Kill the Wonderhawks for Paper and Plastic Records. That's my story.
Well, you can even say, too, do you want to say who's the band that's involved with Kill the Wonderhawks?
It's a record label owned by the drummer of the band Less Than Jake. So they do like records and art prints and stuff, and they decided to get into comics, and they picked the greatest comic guy ever, which is me, and then we did it.
And I'm fading.
My name is Denver Brubaker, and I do a webcomic called Tales of a Checkered Man. Which is about like a Pulp Fiction-esque old Golden Age type hero.
And my name's Josh Emmons. I do a webcomic called City of Sand, but also my studio, Four Star Studios, has just launched a digital comic initiative for iPad and PDF called Double Feature.
My name is Ryan Brown, and I do a webcomic called God Hates Astronauts, and I'm starting a new webcomic called Blast Furnace, and I also contribute to Josh's digital iPad. Comic initiative. There you go.
My name is Dave Wachter. I do a webcomic called The Guns of Shadow Valley at thegunsofshadowvalley.com. Also, if you like comics on paper, I just had my first issue of That Hellbound Train from IDW came out Wednesday. And that's what I do.
And who wrote That Hellmouth Train, sir?
Well, it's from Hellbound. A story. That Hellbound Train is from a story by Robert Block, and it is adapted by Joe and John Lansdale.
Which is pretty impressive. Robert Block, who did Psycho, yeah. For people in the audience who don't know who Robert Block is. Joe Lansdale, a wonderful horror and Western writer that's done a lot of comics and a lot of genre fiction and stuff. So that's awesome. Very cool. And the only reason why I mention that is Wachter and I did a quick floor interview for Word Balloon. I forgot to mention that, so I'm glad you did, Dave. So that's cool. So web comics have been around for over 10 years, but we've kind of now, with the tablet and with the iPad, have moved on to web comics 2.0. And Josh, you've taken this initiative. You're an app developer?
Yes.
That's your day job as well?
My day job is writing for iOS.
Okay, cool. And tell me about, it seems like now we're at the point of when you get at 10 years, usually, there is something that happens that makes anything evolve, and I think webcomics are kind of at that phase two now. Mm-hmm. So tell me about the app and what you're doing with it, and the different innovations that you're putting in.
As far as the innovation the apps or the tablets generally bring to the space, I guess it really provides a physical iPod for a service that I think we in the comics community have been trying to provide for a while now, but hasn't worked because we haven't had a device.
A reader.
Right, exactly. Over the last 10 years, there have been lots of people who've tried to make the iTunes of comics, but they were always, download this to your browser or read it in this protected flash reader on your computer or something like that. It was never the, I'm going to download this to my device, I can take that device with me, it's convenient, it stores my credit card information, it does all the stuff that made iTunes and the iPod a huge success. So with these full screen, full color, gorgeous devices now, comics can more closely follow what's proven to be a successful model for digital content distribution. Specifically, what we're doing in our app is we had kind of a hit list of everything that we didn't like in digital comics that we'd seen so far. Namely, we thought they were too expensive. We thought that they were exactly what you were getting off the shelf. There are no added features or anything like that, despite that digital has advantages. And we wanted to get really great creators involved in it. So our app, all of our stories are 99 cents. Again, the iTunes model, right? Like everybody is comfortable with and is used to downloading content for 99 cents. And we've added a lot of extra features that you can't do in print that cost you extra money in print because you have to add pages, but in digital are free. For example, all of the production art. You can, you know, when you make a comic page, you first pencil it out, you lay it out, that gets inked, that gets colored, and then that gets lettered. We've got all of that content laying around on the editing room floor as it is. Now we can add those into the app. You can just, on any page, you can flip, oh, I wonder what this layout looked like in pencils. Click. Oh, there it is. Which gives you a lot of reread value for it. You can go back over and see all different stages. And then we also added commentary, just like your DVDs. You know, you get director's commentary. You watch the movie, you're like, that was really fascinating. I wonder what was going on during the production of this movie. You get the commentary check. We've got that for every page. Writers and artists can say, here's how this character came about. Here was the generation of the story. Here's the playlist I was listening to when this, you know, when I was writing this page, stuff like that. That we are hoping will, in addition to that 99 cents, give you enough reread value that the digital version of the comic is just such an extraordinary value above what you would get with a print comic that you'll want to do that instead.
I want to go down the row now, and obviously Josh explained it, but of you, first of all, in the audience, are there webcomic makers here in the audience? Show of hands. Gentleman right there. Gentleman right there. Okay, no worries.
Once in, always in. That still counts.
In the audience, who reads comics digitally? Show of hands. About half? Okay, that's cool. But I want to know, now Josh mentioned that his, you know, is at the 99 cent price point of the panel right now as we go down. You know, tell me, you know, is it free? Is it free content? Is it something that you guys are making with a price point in mind?
Well, all the paper and plastic comics are free to download. It's not an app. You just download it from the site. But the model is that they're going to be collected in trades once every arc ends. The two of the series that are going on right now, the Exit Interview and 50 States, are limited series. So those will probably be collected when they're done. Our series is ongoing, so it would just be the same way when they collect arcs. You know, single issue comics, they'll print them. So the idea is that it's free to download, and then we're going to offer the best packaging physically possible once they hit the store, and just you know, it's available in both mediums.
What genres are your stuff related?
Exit Interview is like a fantasy book, and then 50 States is actually tour stories from bands illustrated.
Oh, very cool.
And then Kill the Wonder Hawks is a god-awful sci-fi story.
Would the stories then also be offered if someone were to buy a download of the albums and stuff? Is that like especially 50 States, in the case of 50 States?
Eventually, I think the idea is that the bands are going to contribute music to the comics. So the idea was that when they told us we had free reign over any of the music to use in, if we wanted to do motion comics, we can use any of the bands on the label. And then eventually the bands are going to make like soundtracks to the comics. I don't know how 50 States is going to work with that. But I mean, Paper and Plastic does free samplers quite often online to introduce people to their bands. So we did the same idea with the comics, that you get them for free. And if you like them, then hopefully you would later support them when they are actually in stores.
So yeah, keep going down. Let's talk about what the price point is, and give a little more background on each comic, if you would, guys.
All the Tales of Checker Man comics are available free. The whole model of what I was seeing happen a lot in a lot of indie music, where they would offer a lot of songs online for free, but the point was to go to the shows and buy the T-shirts and so on and so forth, is kind of how I'm approaching my comics.
So you're selling T-shirts and things too?
Well, I mean, I'm the whole monetizing the webcomic is not the biggest concern for me right now. So I have a few items here and there, but mostly it's just I just really like doing it. So I'm
time consuming, though.
It is. I mean, it's very time consuming.
I appreciate the love for what you're doing. And
yeah, but I've you know, it's one of those things where I've had it rolling around in my head for so long that, you know, it's time to put it out there, sort of. But it's the comic itself is I've had people describe it to me as a little bit The Tick and a little bit Kick-Ass, with a gentleman who has a nervous breakdown in like a midlife crisis and assembles a superhero costume out of his closet with no discernible skills whatsoever, and a case of acrophobia, so the rooftop thing is a little rough, and and he monologues a lot to himself, and that's it, and I keep it all ages. I like that aspect of it, and but yeah, I do offer it all for free.
Cool. So. Let's continue with Ryan.
All right. So I currently do two web comics. I do God Hates Astronauts, which is me putting every joke I can think of into a book and then trying to weave a story to tie all the jokes together. It's really just. I spent a lot of time, you know, coming up with proposals and pitches for things, and them not going anywhere, not getting picked up. So I decided I just wanted to do something that was entirely for me. So yeah, it is totally self-serving, my book, and if people like it, that's awesome. And I found as a using it as a webcomic and putting it out there for free, it's been great for getting fans and getting readers and. You know, when you have a good fan base, people want to own physical copies. So I actually have the first two issues, which I have self-published. And there's no really good distribution way that makes financial sense. So it's really just me selling them at cons. And you know, it does pretty well. You know, people read it online and, you know, sometimes you get people that are like, oh, I love your stuff so much. I read the whole thing online for free. Well, see you later. Oh, are you kidding me? Yeah, I was like, oh, man, that stinks. But you know what? There's for every person like that, there's a person that will actually buy it. And that's super, super nice. You know, and now that I'm starting to, like, get actual work from people that like God Hates Astronauts. So that's, like, that is a great way for me to just get exposure.
Sure.
So I'm giving away for free, and then I'm getting more stuff out of it off the back end. But then, like, you know, as I start getting other work that actually pays me, then I don't have time to work on God Hates Astronauts because it's so time-consuming. So I decided to launch another webcomic, and it's what it is it's everything that bothered me about the first webcomic I did, I got rid of, and I'm kind of streamlining the process. So it's going to be what I don't like about webcomics. The way that I do my webcomic is it's basically a comic book, not a strip. So, you know, you have to read page after page after page, and they're all tied together to form a story. But if you read a page a week, you know, it's hard to really get immersed into the story. I mean, it works great as for, like, strips. You know, we've got a beginning, a middle, and end in each, you know, installment. But when you've got, you know, a 24-page story, you're telling over 24 weeks a page at a time. For me, that's too slow. It's not a good way to read it. So I'm doing a book now that is it's called Blast Furnace, and it launches June 27th, and it is going to be 5 pages a week, so every weekday, for an entire year. So I'm launching on my 30th birthday, and I'm going to do it for the whole time I'm 30. So it's going to be my little chronicling being 30 and what that's like and what that makes me create. But I'm going to write it as I draw it. And
a page a day, Monday through Friday, is that the plan?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. So it will, you know, hopefully June 27th, you know, 2012, there will be a 252-page story that I've told. We'll see how long I can go with this. You know, it's like I really like endurance tests and stuff like that. So the idea is I spend an hour drawing each page. It's black and white. drawn pretty loosely, but like all the ideas and story are all still there, and the way that I make God Hates Astronauts is basically the same way, except I spent a lot more time coloring it and cleaning up the drawings and making sure everything's spelled correctly. So yeah, so that's the new, it's just going to be me making jokes that I like and taking it wherever it can be, and I've been working on it for a while now, and to build up some pages so I don't get too stressed out having to do it every single day, and I'm already just going everywhere. If I've got 252 pages, I've got flashbacks that lead into flashbacks that lead into flashbacks leading to flashbacks. It's like, just do whatever I want. It's like disposable, you know. I can just, it's really, really nice. It's not quantity over quality. It's quantity with quality. That's what I keep telling myself. So it's going to be at blastfurnacecomic.com. And it's about Blast Furnace, and he's a recreational thief, which means he doesn't do it for a profession, so he doesn't make money off of it. He does it because it's fun, and that to me is just kind of the crux of the character. He just likes stealing things, and he has a tie that's always on fire. And yeah, that's the book.
It's also free. Right?
Yeah. Oh, and it's super free. It's all for me. Extra. It's all for me, and I'll put it out there, and I would love it if people read it. But I'm gonna do it whether people read it or not. it's gonna happen. That's all I got.
Gotcha, Dave.
Yeah, the Guns of Shadow Valley elevator pitch is the Magnificent Seven meets the X-Men. So it's basically call it a webcomic, but it's a graphic novel online, like you said, type of thing where you continuing story, a long form, with an end goal of eventually putting it into print, preferably an oversized, hardbound, deluxe slipcase, foil, laser etched.
Keep going.
Something that would really, really set you back on your mortgage payments.
Yeah.
That's what I'm really hoping for. So at this point, it's free webcomic online. We release it very, very sparingly. We don't want to be overindulgent. We don't want anybody to get. We don't want any overdoses on our webcomic. So right now we do two a month. We hope that doesn't hurt anyone. We were doing it weekly, and then I had to pay the rent. So I started, I had some other work with the publishers and stuff like that to do. So then we went down to a monthly, and now I'm back up. So now it actually, people feel like they're getting a lot out of twice a month, because they're getting twice as much as they were getting for about 4 or 5 months.
Take notes.
So I'm dishing out very, very little bit at a time. We got an Eisner nomination last year, which got us some good attention. We are in the process, sort of an exploratory phase of my campaign, to get it into downloadable formats that we would be able to have, like 99 cents for a chapter. But I'm actually in the process of assembling the files for that, because I want to add all those extras that you're talking about earlier. All those sort of the inks and the pencils and all that kind of stuff, and production notes and all that kind of stuff we want to add in. So I'm in the process of doing that, so it's going to kind of slow, but eventually have those things available. If you want to download it right now, there are plenty of sites that will let you do that for free. They do not have my permission to do so, but I can't stop you. I don't know, what else was the question?
that was good.
No, and that's it. You know, I mean, I do it because it was a story I wanted to tell. It was something I love doing it. I look at it now, and I think if I were to start it now, I would do it differently. I probably would not do such a long story.
That was
kind of
my question.
Something that I probably wouldn't do now. And I've actually got ideas for other webcomics that I also don't have time to do. That would be, you know, like a strip format or something that is basically a strip but then adds up over time type of thing you kind of read. But I would like to do that if I can ever find a minute to do that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because I think a lot of the webcomics are more akin to comic strips as opposed to comic books. And, you know, I'm a huge fan, especially of the old adventure strips, and I keep reading great interviews from guys like Milton Caniff and Chester Gould and guys like that. And the question that always comes up is, how long do you take a story? And it was really interesting to hear guys like Caniff say, who did Steve Canyon and Terry and the Pirates, that he would normally wrap up a story in about 4 weeks. And, you know, this is 5 days a week plus the Sunday strip. And, you know, just to kind of keep things fresh. And that's why I can appreciate you all saying, too, that it's a calling card to get other jobs and also an opportunity to keep building on your artistic skills. And I was telling Dave when I was interviewing him individually earlier, I see the evolution in Dave's work, and I've been aware of Dave's work for over 5 years. And, you know, again, I mean, the only way that you get better, as guys like Michael Jordan and Malcolm Gladwell tell us, is you keep doing it, you keep practicing, and you see the art evolve. So I do see that. But, yeah, I was wondering, Dave, given that Shadow Valley kind of had this open-ended, mm-hmm. no end in sight, yeah. you know, I mean, there's a plan. I know there's a plan because we've discussed the plan. But, you know, it's like I can appreciate that
in
after a while.
In the future. It'll happen in the future.
But, yeah, it'd be nice to have a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, it would. I don't know. It's very dark where we are right now. We've gotten to a point where we can no longer see the light from the hole we came in at, and there's no light on the other end yet either. So I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, I would love to be able to work on it full time and get that thing out at a good clip, you know. I mean, if I was able to work on it full time, you'd have, you know, 3-4 pages a week of that.
Well,
not
that was
anything else, but, you know, it's impossible.
That's what I want to ask you guys, too, is given that it is that idea, like I said, of a comic strip where you do want people to come back for the next installment, it has to influence how you're writing and how you're pacing these stories. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that affects it once it is collected as well. So this is a, you know, as I've been talking to DC and Marvel creators, and they are looking at the digital market, most comic book stories are told in either 4, 5, or 6 parts. And it's one thing to go into a store, and most of us as consumers are used to going to comic stores every Wednesday. We understand the deal that we're getting an issue. It's going to be 30 days till the next chapter. In this digital arena, and especially as you try to get a new audience to kind of, you know, get interested in these things, how do they feel when, you know, sometimes, you know, it's you're getting the first chapter, you're spending $1.99 or $2.99. Josh, I know with 4-Star, mm-hmm. you guys are really trying to tell self-contained stories that do continue to a degree, but you're trying a bunch of different genres, mm-hmm. and also I know that and I've read the first issue in particular, that, you know, you have 2 8-page stories. So yeah, as we go down, you know, you can start, Josh, and then we'll start with Dave and kind of go down the list. But yeah, really, like, pacing these stories and trying to attract this new audience, how does that affect your storytelling?
I think so everything about digital, I think, generally is the Wild West right now. And,
sure.
And in comics in particular, it's just such a watershed moment that it's hard to say if there are any right answers. This is a big reason that we got together to do Double Feature, our project, is we don't know if we have the right answers, but we need to learn. If there are wrong answers, we need to find it out pretty quickly now, because somebody has to. And it seems, you know, not surprisingly and not through any fault of their own, you know, the big companies that have been pushing comics thus far are not going to do that for us. They have their entrenched markets, you know. They will be going digital, but they'll be drag kicking and screaming to that. That's just the way, you know, markets work. So us as the little guys, the indie creators, I think that's our, this is our game now. We have to, you know, push where we can push and see what's a mistake and what's not. From our point of view, I think it's very easy for digital, for all the reasons you just listed, to really decompress storytelling. That you don't have the month gap, right? You don't have to give somebody enough story to get them over the hump. You can just go on and on and on and on and on and tell every, you know, if especially if you're doing a project like Ryan's doing, where you're or a more standard web strip that's updating Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or 5 days a week, if it strips off, well, you've got, what, 2 days until the next one. Fine, we'll pick it back up there. So it can lead to this very kind of decompressed storytelling that's become actually very prevalent in print comics now, too, now that I think about it, with, like, the part 1 of 5, part 1 of 6 stuff, and nothing really happens until 5 or 6.
Yeah. What do you do in 3 and 4, exactly, if that's the first time
they're reading? It's a lot of talking, it's a lot of setup, it's a lot of moving characters to where they have to be from when it actually gets interesting. I mean, heck, even TV, like Lost, how many episodes of Lost were just getting to the end of the season? And that's something that we are very strongly against. Something that we really like. Digital makes that easy, but it's a trap. We think that there needs to be a return to very compressed, very tight storytelling. One of the ways that we're enforcing that with Double Feature is that Double Feature, as the name implies, it's two stories. You get two stories for 99 cents, and each of those stories are 8 pages. And these are not 1 of 5, these are one-and-done stories. They, can allude to something that's happened before, or you can write a story after they allude to it, fine, but this story has to be self-contained. One of the reasons we're doing that is because we want to be at 99 cents. And if you're going to, when you break down that 99 cents to give to creators, you can't have somebody, take a month to do 22 pages and say, and here's your, 20 cents an issue or something like that. That doesn't pay rents. But, 8 pages, you can get that done in a week. You can have another, monthly gig at that cost. But also it enforces this very strict, we need to get back to what a story is. 8 pages, if you can't tell it in 8 pages, you couldn't tell it in 6 issues. 8 pages is plenty to do a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's the last thing before going out too long here, I guess, is that it allows us to fail fast. This is something that I'm super familiar with in, like, the tech entrepreneur startup world, that, you think you got a great idea. Don't build up that idea and the infrastructure of the idea and talk to people about the idea and get a team together for the idea and blah, 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 blah. Do it. Get the idea out there in whatever rudimentary form you can as fast as possible, because you're not going to know if it's a good idea until other people see it. It forced us to use our kind of unofficial motto. Our official motto is deeds, not words. Don't talk about what you want to do. Get something out there. I just put out this story about Radbots for our sci-fi issue that's, giant robots from the 80s today. And is that something that's funny? I think it's funny, but, I easily could have built up, a 6-issue arc about these people, but putting out a nice little compressed 8-page story that tells their origin, a fun adventure with them, and kind of wraps it up, now I can get feedback from everybody. Was that a good idea? If it was, I can go on and do more with it. If it wasn't, great, I've got other ideas I can move on to. And that's another big benefit of the compressed storytelling that I think we really need to keep a focus on in the digital world, because it's so easy to slip the other direction.
I wish you had talked to me a couple of years ago.
and I should point out that, I came to this conclusion after spinning my wheels for a year and a half on my own webcomic, City of Sand, that, now I'm at this point where you described it almost perfectly with your experiences.
The interesting thing, too, before you guys continue, is that, I've addressed this to some of the creators of Marvel and DC, and a lot of them just kind of shrugged and said, look, man, I'm kind of in this mode of telling a 6-part story. I'm going to continue to do that. And at first they shot back and said, well, with that first issue, it's kind of like buying a song from an album. And I immediately corrected them and said, no, it's not, because really you're offering the first verse of a song and saying, you want that chorus? Come back in 30 days. We'll see it. Yeah. And that's not going to work, especially for, again, these people that are not used to the rhythm of buying every 30 days and also reading like that. So I really think that's the challenge, and I'm glad to hear that you're thinking of
And one more thing I just want to throw in there is that digital is a huge opportunity. I mean, it's the reboot of all reboots, right? In theory.
How timely.
Yeah, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, everybody here is familiar with the comic.
You guys know about DC and what DC is doing? They're going to, people are nodding. It's 52 new titles. They're kind of wiping away continuity that's been going on for about 25 years now. Yeah. And really going back and saying, okay, we're starting brand new. Like Superman is starting on day one, Batman. It's very interesting ideas. Go ahead, guys.
But just the whole point of that is to expand the audience of comics, right?
Right.
We love you guys, right? The people who come to cons, fantastic. But I don't know that comics can survive on just that group of people, especially with the big companies trying to be as, do the sweeping projects that they're trying to do. digital is a fantastic way to reach a larger audience, to expand our audience beyond the people that are willing to come to cons, and also the people who don't have a con near them and are out in the middle of, you know, Minnesota somewhere and only have an internet connection. And they are not used to the Wednesday comic phenomenon. And that could, you could see how that could easily turn somebody off who's not used to it right away. So it would, you know, we want to keep this audience as large as possible, so let's not shoot ourselves in the feet right away.
Chime in, gentlemen. Anyone wants to talk about this?
Yep.
well said, Dave.
Yeah. With Wonderhawks, we're doing like varying arcs, so we don't really have a set. Like we have to do 6-parters. We will do 5-parters. We'll do 4-parters, but sometimes we will break it up with 2 issues. So the thing is, since it is monthly and digital, and some, that confuses some people, but like, well, why aren't you doing it every other day? And they are full, you know, 14-page stories, and they're free, so stop complaining. for one.
Yeah, Dave, why aren't you doing it every other day? Come on, man. It's really easy.
I'm not Ryan Brown. me writing it, I got to make sure that I do them as memorable as possible. So, I mean, each issue is... We view it, the comic, more like a cartoon, so we actually refer to the issues as episodes. The idea is that we are actually making a non-moving cartoon. That was the whole story behind Wonderhawks. It's actually supposed to be a parody of the 70s and 80s teen team cartoons, like G-Force and stuff, but they're just horrible people. And so... I have the skeleton of, is this going to be a sad, introspective issue? That's fine, but then what do I got to do to make this a Wonderhawks issue and make this so that people say, we'll think about it for 30 days and not lose interest, you know, waiting for the next one? So, you know, I got to, if it's sad, introspective, the background story has to be that this girl's parents got eaten by rabbits or something. or I got to drop a bus on naked cowboys, which is what the pilot was. And another thing too is that, like, I get to take chances. I can't go to DC or Marvel or most companies and say, hey, I want to do a comic with swearing animals and kangaroo farmers and naked Texas Rangers and people swearing and blowing each other up. I mean, I'm not Garth Ennis. I can't just be like, I want to do this, you know. So it's something too where we don't know what we're doing, so we're just kind of trying and seeing. We're competing against the comics that are coming out consistently, so we're just kind of, we're removing the comic book store from the monthly book, so it's just important for us to make it as good of an issue as possible. I kind of went on a tangent.
when I first started out trying to, I had a very similar experience with the just put it out there, you know, just, you know, and I look at the first strips and I'm like, oh man, what was I doing? But I also was pretty bold going like, yeah, I'll do 5 a week. Yeah, it's not a big deal, you know, I can whip these out. And that wasn't the case at all. I ended up deciding to do 2 a week. But I had written them like 5 a week. So my first whole month was the same joke. So like Charlie Brown can do that. He can do the kite-eating tree like 3 days in a row and switch gears. But when you're only doing 2 comics a week, I was going, man, this kind of sucks. It's the same thing over and over again. So, I love newspaper strips, but I also love, humor, or like, I love Flash Gordon and the Phantom and Tearing of Pirates. I love all that stuff. And so I love the adventure, the serialized nature of that. And so I was like, well, I can just marry them all together and that'll be great. But it became much more of a gag sort of strip when I initially started writing it, but I was like, oh, but I'm going to have this great underlying theme, and they're all going to, if you read them all collected, it's going to tell this awesome story, you know? But doing the 2 a week, learning that kind of almost like you have a flow. You know, you can kind of set up, like I do on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you set up punchline. So there, within each strip, which I don't limit myself to say three panels or four panels, I do whatever works. I try to do a beginning, middle, end of the strip, but also within the week, and then the framework of a arc. So hopefully, you know, if someone comes and, you know, if no one's read it and they go and start reading from number one, like today, when you get to the latest strip, there is an arc, there is progression, there are things happening, and there are different, you know, that's what I had to learn when I first started writing. It's really difficult, but it was all a feel it out as you go, you know, figure it out as you go sort of thing. And I don't think that and one of the sad things I think about comics is there's no loyalty to a creative team in a lot of ways. I mean, you have to be like top dollar to stick on a book. And I mean, I'm not a big fan of it, but Ultimate Spider-Man, you know, I mean, how, you know, whatever, you know, I mean, he's been able to take that and do whatever he's wanted with it. But every four issues, every six issues, there's new creative teams. And I used to love, like, you know, Claremont's X-Men run.
Sure.
And he got to evolve, and yeah, he tangented like crazy and he'd never tie that stuff up, but you could see his single vision, and you can't see that in a lot of modern comics. And that's what I really enjoy about being able to try and fail, mm-hmm. and go, I'm not going to do that again, or this worked. I'll give that a whirl, you know, in a few weeks. And I think that's one of the real strengths of webcomics, and as far as I'm concerned.
They're obviously rotating artists and creative teams on the mainstream stuff because they want to, you know, get that smash of that, you know, hopefully six-figure number of, you know, sales. And, you know, obviously, I think, unfortunately, when you have a long run, people do kind of settle in. You've got your core audience, which is a significant five-figure number, but how many of those titles really last at that six, you know, figure level? And I think that's why, and I think that's why the big two in particular kind of stunt after every 6 months or year and give you a new team and a fresh take on a book.
And with the DC reboot, I guess I can understand in some ways why, you know, they're like, okay, we're going to start Superman over from day one, or however that's going to work, because it's so hard to access those characters anymore. There's so the continuities. I have no idea what's going on with the X-Men. If someone wants to explain that to me later on, I have no clue. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. Is Krypton what's going on? I have no idea.
Mutant powers.
The story of the moment is built on five stories that have taken place in the last 20 years.
And I'm with you.
I am totally with you.
You know? Yeah.
No, and that's why I welcome the reboot as well. And I mean, God, I'm in my 40s and I've been through a bunch of reboots, and I'm laughing at some of these people who are really upset by it, and I'm never going to read a DC comic again. How can they destroy what I've loved for generations? I see a couple kids in the audience and they're doing it partially to get them interested, yeah. and have them have their own stories started and be able to like approach Superman or Batman fresh and get excited about it. And that's the thing. We get jaded as we get older. And luckily, I think a lot of us stay around for the new innovations. And it's, if anything, we welcome the reboots. Well, and it's like, great, give us a new spin on an old idea.
But I mean, my hope anyways is, and we'll see how it plays out, but my hope is that digital can be the end of that to a certain extent. That, like, right now they're rebooting because nobody knows where to start. Well, in digital, nothing ever goes off the shelf.
Right.
Right? You make your story, you're playing the long game now. It's not a numbers game from month to month. Oh, let's change the team to get more people. It's we're going to make this miniseries and then sell a ton of them in DVD game for us now. Because our back issues are always going to be immediately available. You'll never have a reason to start in the middle of a story unless you're perverse and want to or whatever. You go and you start issue number one. You're going to download it and you're going to read it in two and three just as everybody else who read the series did.
But you all also represent different genres, and that's something I want to get into too, because I think these new readers, we're all superhero fans because of DC and Marvel, but it's I'm glad to see that part of the reboot is they're doing war books, they're doing westerns.
Yes, yeah. Here.
You know, they're doing horror books and everything. Yes. And I also think with that idea of starting fresh, I think a lot of these initial things, and also I think your guys' products as well, it's getting this audience that maybe thinks comics are only Archie, superheroes, Richie Rich, that's it, and reminding them that there are these other genres that can be explored in the medium. The key to that is, and this is something that I want to ask you guys, and this is a big challenge, I think, for the independent web creators, is the partnerships that you make. Marvel, while DC has made this very loud announcement about the reboot, Marvel very quietly at the beginning of the spring said that they've got a partnership with Starbucks. Mm-hmm. I think that's brilliant, because that's going to get that reader who didn't even think about looking at comics, or maybe hasn't in 10 or 20 years, they're going to hook onto Starbucks Wi-Fi, and literally right there, you have a virtual newsstand. If you guys know, when you go into Starbucks and you use their Wi-Fi, would you like to listen to this for free? Would you like to read this for free? And a Marvel comic is obviously going to be part of that package. I think that's huge. And John Root is the DC guy that is kind of their digital guru and comes with a great reputation. He did it for ABC Television and has developed partnerships. I haven't heard about any of these partnerships, but it is getting that audience, you know, like Josh, in the case of Four Star, you got, you know, you're doing sci-fi books, getting sci-fi fans that maybe aren't aware that, you know, your guys' products are coming up. What can you do to get those eyeballs that aren't expecting to find your product to find it?
The thing that really worries me about, I think the Marvel deal is brilliant also, but the thing that worries me is if our goal is to convince the Starbucks crowd that comics are more than just superheroes, I'm not sure that Marvel was the person to make that partnership with.
Well, they're interested in their properties, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
The other thing for Double Feature that we're doing is in addition, there are a lot of rules for Double Feature, it turns out. But in addition to enforcing, like, you know, an 8-page story, and it has to be all ages, and, you know, we want all of your process art and things like that, and you have to have commentary for it. Each month is a different genre that we focus on. So there's the action one, which can be superhero, but it could be any sort of action story. Then we also have the horror month, and then we have the sci-fi month, and we have a fantasy month to highlight different stories from around. Because we really, part of that growing the audience is comics as a genre, or comics as a medium, has become synonymous with the superhero genre. And that could be bigger. So we try to enforce that by making rules. I'm not sure how successful that will be, but, you know, at least that content is out there now.
I just take whatever I'm doing and I just mix it with the X-Men. So I will bring you into another genre because it also has the X-Men in it.
Right.
But, Dave, like, you're doing a Western, and Dave Loso, your thing hooking up with a record label, I think that's great because, I know Warbling listeners are sick of this story, so I'll be as quick as I can. but there's, and now I'm blanking on his name, but one of the Western comic creators couldn't get one of the big two to do their story, so what they did instead was they self-published it and then advertised it in a cowboy and Western magazine. And it got the Western fans aware. And they were never going to walk into a comic book store and pick up his book. But the good news was he found this and was able to use it via mail order, and it became a big success, or at least paid for itself, and he actually made a profit on it. So like I said, Dave, you're dealing with, especially in 50 states and stuff, you're dealing with different bands. The Amory Wars is with, and I always forget the name of the band.
Coheed and Cambria.
Thank you. I always say Cohiba and Carnuba, knowing that that's not their name.
Cochise and... another thing you said, your story you just told made me aware that there are cowboy and Western magazines. So they did a really good job because they just full circle. It was cool because we got an audience that might not normally listen to or read comics. So Paper and Plastic is a really cult following, which was awesome because we were getting, you know, when people were downloading it, the way it's set up is that you get it for free, but you have to promote it for us.
That's smart.
Yeah, so in order to download it, you either have to tweet it or Facebook link it before you can download it. And it auto-tweets a message, which Paper and Plastic made the wise choice of tagging my name in it. So every time someone downloads it, I get a thing on my phone. So the day it launched, I got, you know, a few hundred of these constantly while I was at work. And, you know, I would go and I was interested. I would pick random people that were downloading it and look you know, at like, you know, in their interests and stuff on their Twitter page, and not a lot of people were comic people. They were a lot of music people, and that was part of the reason why, you know, when Vinny told me, you know, hey, we're going to start doing comics, I was like, that's awesome. You know, they did it before with art. So they're a record label that represents bands and artists. So when you go on there, the whole thing is paper is the artist and plastic are the bands. So he said it was just a logical step is to start doing comics. So yeah, we were hitting that audience, and then at the same time, like I said before, setting it up, and like what you said, what Denver said with like his idea of modeling after the way indie bands did it was the idea that we're going to give it away for free, and if you really like it, you're going to buy it. You know, paper and plastic gives a lot of music away for free, and they sell a ton of records a month just because people really want to support the bands, and we hope that that'll be the same with the comic creators too. And so it's our job then when we finally go to physical copies to give them the best possible physical package we can, which if there ever was a company to do this, it is paper and plastic, so we kind of lucked out that they get to make my stupid stories look really, really nice. So that's how we're kind of doing it with the music community.
Do we want to? Do people have questions? I mean, we're kind of at the 20-minute mark now. So, if anyone has any questions,
best way to promote your website.
There you go. What's the best way to promote your website, gentlemen? Go down the list.
Well, with us, we've just been huge brats since we launched Kill the Wonderhawk. So we've just been doing horrible promotion, like on purpose. And paper and plastic has been letting us do whatever we want. We've been making fun of DC for weeks now. We released a fake press release, and they sent it out to websites saying we were relaunching Kill the Wonderhawks after the first issue. So we were kind of taking, like, with the whole thing is they're a punk label. We're kind of taking, like, a punk rock attitude towards the way we promote it. So they let us send out ads with nudity in it. They let us put swear words out all over the internet. It was groundbreaking stuff for the internet. Nudity and swear words.
You're the one who brought nudity and swearing the internet.
We planted a flag in the moon of the internet.
It's beautiful.
Just obviously do it however you want. It's not just mass emails. Like we said, we did it in a way that made sense with ours, is that we write this ridiculous comic book. We should be promoting it ridiculously and doing very stupid things in order to get people to read it.
Something I've seen webcomic guys do, and I wonder if you guys do this as well, is really invade the message boards of existing, you know, sites. And I did that to help promote the podcast. And what I've seen a lot of webcomic people do is they've got a banner that kind of advertises their webcomic, and it's usually very enticing. I think paper and plastic's idea of offering, you know, it for free, provided that you tweet or Facebook this and everything and get it out. I mean, it really, word of mouth, and especially with social networks, is really such an important part of, I think, promoting anything online. And luckily, I do think that your core fans will help you. And I'm always shocked at how many people are helping me promote Word Balloon and stuff. So please, gentlemen, continue.
Great.
Isn't that nice about me? Yeah, thanks a lot.
The grassroots sort of word of mouth thing is how I've done mine. I've done some. I don't know if you're familiar with this service, Project Wonderful, which is an ad advertising service online. I've done that, and that's worked really well. Twitter was amazing. Twitter is awesome as far as promoting
Twitter and Facebook. I think are both.
Yeah, yeah, I just don't have enough time in the day to do two of them. You know what I mean? It seems like
that's the
MySpace.
That hour, in the morning.
That's the great
shower. You know,
right? it's he was talking about the message boards and so on and so forth. Yeah. But really, it's meeting other cartoonists. Swapping fan art or, you know, doing things like, you know, if someone's running into, I have to take my wife to the hospital, I can't finish my strip, doing a guest strip for them, you know, knocking something like that out. And then their fans are now seeing your artwork with all your links, and then they're possibly coming to your stuff. And I haven't really run into any real big jerks as far as the webcomic community either, because everyone seems to be on the same page.
Well, we haven't really met
Get to know us.
Until to
get
know.
To know
yeah. But also everyone seems to pretty much have the same. Everyone seems to approach it differently. You know, your model versus your model versus your model is all a little different. But the end goal is still essentially the same sort of thing. You know, that's that whole. The idea of I know that I only buy records anymore, and I don't even buy CDs anymore. I try to buy the vinyl stuff of it's only the stuff I really love, and it's like the book or the again the material aspect is the novelty. You know, you're only you know it's you can get songs very easily and very free, you know, but if you really love something, you're going to purchase that, you know, maybe that printed volume. So being able to offer it in so many different ways is a great boon to doing stuff now, you know, versus 15 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
So
if you love something, you're going to buy Dave's $500
slip cut or slip case, die cut
ultra edition.
Right. Also, if there's been a lot of bad weather this year, so if you have a tornado come through, you can hold on to it.
Cover. Hold it over your head, and
It will protect you. It will protect you.
Sir, please.
So, you podcast, and what I found, I don't know if it exists for webcomics, but I'd love for it to exist easily, is that the iTunes podcast area, I can just subscribe to a bunch of things, and it's very easy for me to find things. With webcomics, similar to podcasts, there's so many out there, I don't know where to go to just, and I know they have RSS feeds, but still don't know, I'm not very good with those.
Yeah, outside of like Penny Arcade, I know is a good kind of catch-all.
So I'm just where do I go? I mean, is there one place to go to where
interesting.
It's not going to happen?
Well, I think, you know, some of those it can just kind of snowball in terms of if you find one you like. Right. I think a lot of web comics people help each other out, and that's how I've gotten all of my exposure was getting people who are more famous than me and make better stuff than me like my stuff, and then convince everyone else to look at it. So it's kind of like if you. A lot of web comics will kind of have, you know, friends and allies, and will have links, and so you can just kind of start with something you like, and then move on through the links on their sites, and just like. But right now, I think that's really the only way that you can really find them. I mean, I don't really read too many web comics, but the ones I have is really just a friend says, "Hey, look at this thing," and I look at it, and then you know, there's you know. Places to go on that site to see other webcomics.
I found God Hates Astronauts on DeviantArt.
Did you really?
Go? Yep. And I found Guns of Shadow Valley through a podcast. And, you know, so, I mean, and also, I mean, I don't... I definitely put links. I have a whole links page, you know, and you know, to you know, so.
But I think,
like a Google saying, Reader or something
well,
like that.
There's like top webcomics in the webcomics list and stuff like that. That's kind of along.
But what you're seeing there is a lack of curation, I think. We're doing the best we can by making we're putting up what we like, and so go to those, and by using social media as a stand-in for curation, but it's only going to take us so far, and you point out the big flaw in doing that there is no canonical source to go to. And sadly, I think as creators, we are singularly inept at facing that challenge. It's not going to happen. It's up to you guys out there. I mean, this kind of thing, this is a solved problem. It's happened for every genre or media there is out there. Fans have come together and created some resource to curate and collect these things. And so, you know, somebody please do that. I would really like that.
Yeah. Chris Marshall from Collected Comics Library has a comment or a question.
I wanted to ask about the technology side. With the advent of the iPad and other Android tablets and everything, have we arrived at the readership? I mean, or is there something lacking as far as the hardware and software to help user experience?
Touching paper.
There's always going to be that paper argument, right? And I have a certain sympathy for that, not a huge sympathy, but that's just the way I roll. I'm not sentimental about my books or my paper or the way it smells, or I don't have a sense of smell. So digitally, I can't think of a lot that I would like. I will say, so we've looked at Android a lot lately, and I would really – like Android to have a payment solution that is as well thought out and wrapped up as Apple's. Apple's in-app purchase system is, I'm sure everybody's heard about how they take 30% off of the cost. It's worth it. It saves us so much money. To try to roll that on my own, I'd be taking a lot more than 30 cents off of it. I would love for everything to have that. If the web had that, I wouldn't have to write an app. I could just write an HTML5 something web page that tied into some sort of payment processing solution. Apple has that wired. Other people could stand to catch up on that. After that, I mean, it's really just kind of bandwidth and resolution. You know, I would love for the iPad to have greater resolution, but that means we'd have to have greater bandwidth because all my files would be four times the size. And interface-wise, I think we're exactly where we need to be technology-wise.
Yeah, I agree. The interface on the that Josh created is really incredible. And I did a story for the second issue of Double Feature, which is the horror story, and
Monsterology.
Yeah, it's called it's called Monsterology, and it was written by B. Clay Moore. And the comic looks perfect. It looks exactly the same as it did when it was on my computer screen when I was coloring it. Like, you know, everything looks exactly how it should be. And, you know, the interactive, like, ability just to, you know, drag from the corner and turn pages as you wish is really, really nice. It's a lot more satisfying than, say, you know, clicking on something and it brings up the next image. And then, you know, there's flyout windows for the commentary, which is really was really, really fun to write commentary on my creative process. And, like, you know, I have a commentary, and then Clay wrote his commentary. And so we both have our own sides that we're telling about the creative process and us working together. And then just being able to see the different layers of work, which actually as an artist was kind of stressful for me because I knew everyone was going to see my pencils on every single page, and my pencils are pretty rough. So I had to spend a little more time on them so that they would... Be presentable.
Touch up your pencils.
Well, when I was drawing, I thought about it. I did. I was like, this all has to look, you know, pretty clean. You know,
he outsources pencils.
And then there's, like, bonus features, which, you know, I've got, like, concept drawings in the back. And I can, like, you know, being an artist, like, my voice is my artwork. But also, I got to have my own voice heard, you know, just writing text about what I was doing. And that was really, like, a fun thing to be able to speak about. And I actually wish I wrote even more. Like, I had a ton to say. So I think next time I'd write even more. But, yeah, I can't think of anything you could possibly have beyond
what we have. Ultimately,
you
get a page-sized color thing that you can touch to interface with. And that's, I mean, that's, you take it where you want from there. I think that's... that's very quickly becoming a commodity, and that's good for all of us.
And one other little touch about that I love is when you turn the iPad on its side, you can then get a two-page spread.
Yes, that's nice.
And it's super cool, super slick.
I can just get an app of just Malcolm McDowell narrating every comic I write. That's awesome. McDowell or Robert Evans. That'd be great.
There you go. Yeah, Robert Evans, that great voice.
That's all the technology I need.
Well, you know, and from a hardware standpoint, and obviously it would make the tablets more expensive, I'm surprised that there wasn't, and maybe there will still be, the double screen to kind of simulate opening a book and having two pages. And I understand when you put the iPad or a tablet on its side, you get two pages, but I think that is the one thing that's missing that might make some readers more...
I fear that there's something of an uncanny valley there, though. That I mean, there's the paper experience, and what love it or hate it, technology is never going to get us there. Mm-hmm. If we're going to do digital, I mean, if it does, we're talking 200 years in the future. So,
I'm waiting for my jetpack. Yes, sir.
So, yeah. If you're going to go down that road, I feel like this is one of those things where you could try over and over to get closer to that experience, and it's always going to fail in some obvious way. So, just save your resources. Don't even go towards
don't try.
That. Work towards making what we have better. That's my take on it. That's the philosophy behind the design that I do.
I think we're at our final minute, so, sir, please.
On that point, are you looking at how to change it so that it's not easily transferable to page, but more transferable to the digital form, not just web pages, but to the readers?
What is it in that? The content?
Or? The way the content flows. You know, it's not just page and a page and a page.
I see.
Like the infinite canvas sort of thing, maybe?
I think there's a lot of... I'm writing an app with Tony Akins right now that he's got a lot of ideas about the way he wants... So it won't be just page-by-page content. He's trying to figure out how to lay out stuff specifically for... a digital thing, a digital window.
I suppose. Somebody had done that. God, it was over a year ago, where you're just you're tapping on it or you were clicking on it. Mm-hmm. This is before the iPad actually came out. So you were clicking on it, and you click, and you know you've got your panel or whatever that you're looking at with your character standing there. You click again, the second character shows up. You click again, the first word balloon comes up.
Yeah.
You click again, a second word balloon comes up. You know,
that's a lot of clicking.
Sadly, I've seen it on bootleg comics, and I saw it done with The Walking Dead, and I was really impressed with the idea. And it's like, hey, I hope Kirkman's taking notes, and you know, does it legally and stuff, you know.
And that's just one example of why we should not get comfortable with any solution that we have right now. It's like, so you can imagine somebody who's only ever used Comixology and thinks, okay, well, that is comics on the iPad forever and ever, amen, right? And they'd be missing out on a lot because that is evolving week by week, it seems.
Very cool. Well, please take advantage of while these guys are here this afternoon and go to their tables and check out their stuff because it's impressive. And I'm very pleased with the level of conversation we had today. So thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
There you go, the Summit City Comic Con digital panel. Now, I've got floor interviews for Summit City Comic Con, and that'll be showing up later in July. But post-July 4th, back to the usual nonsense of straight-up interviews coming your way from Word Balloon. John Suntress saying thanks again for listening today. Don't forget to come to our website, wordballoon.com, for our full archive of episodes. We also post episodes weekly at ifanboy.com. Good guys, check out their podcasts as well. Not only the pick of the week, but also their Don't Miss podcast. So good stuff. And their special editions that they pop up every now and then, just like we do here at Word Balloon. Questions or comments about the show, reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com, or follow me on Twitter under John Word Balloon, on Facebook under my name, John Suntress, or, you could just, whatever, tap me on the shoulder if you see me at a convention. My next one's going to be the San Diego Comic-Con, coming in less than 3 weeks. I am moderating the podcast panel and the John Hickman panel. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Hope to see you there. We're going to have copies of Word Balloon magazine to hand out at both of those panels as well. So make sure you stop by and say hello. Until next time, thanks again for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2011.